Hello, I'm Paddy O'Donoghue, and welcome to Season 1, Episode 5 of the In The Bin Rugby Pod. We've got a packed show to bring you today. Eddie Jones sidesteps Jonathan Joseph and pulls the plug on Sinclair in his latest squad announcement. And Sean O'Brien turns over the Lions coaches. In the Premiership, Newcastle Falcons swooped into the wreck and took maximum points. Exeter took the sting out of Wasps. And at the Stoop, yellow card decisions stooped to a new low. We'll also delve into the Pro 14, where Glasgow kissed Munster goodbye, and proof that the world has really gone mad as Italian and South African sides win games. And of course, we will bring you our Try of the Week, Hit of the Week, and Bin Juice. So I'm joined as ever by Andy Wenborn. Andy, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Paddy. And how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad for a Monday. Quite excited that we've got a pretty juicy lineup for stuff to discuss this week. It seems like there's a been many, many talking points.
Yeah, there's a lot of news floating about. We can't even cover all of it. We're going to get to the main points that we can for you.
Well, let's start with, well, England's squad announcement. So Eddie Jones announced the squad on Friday. Was it Friday?
Thursday.
And although it is only a training squad, I think it's fair to say that there's a lot of selections and non-selections that have caught the eye, with the main ones being Jonathan Joseph, Carl Sinclair, and possibly James Haskell.
Yeah, I think you never quite want to be in Eddie Jones's mind, because you talk to a lot of players who've been around the squad and they give all these buzz phrases that he's got. So he says things like, you know, get comfortable being uncomfortable and all of that. And it's whether he's seen that someone like Joseph has started the season okay, but just not as well as Jonathan Joseph can play. And what he's gone is, you're not in my training squad, and therefore it's just to make you think, oh, my place isn't comfortable. And he's just trying to make people play better. And then if you look at what happened this weekend, Joseph actually put in quite a decent turn, to be fair. Same with Sinclair, had an average okay start to the season, and he's just going, well, you know, Harry Williams at Exeter is playing really, really well. Dan Cole is his bedrock. You got up your game, mate. You're not automatically in my squad because you went on the Lions tour.
Yeah, I'm not sure. As you say, trying to figure out actually what Eddie Jones is thinking is a bit of a nightmare. And I don't know whether it is the fact that it's just a training squad. And I think that's probably the point I missed at first when I was thinking about some of these omissions. I was kind of thinking, well, I'm not really sure what he's playing at. But then I think everyone needs to remember that this isn't a named squad for the November internationals. That's going to come later. And if anything, this is a really good opportunity to look at some of maybe the fringe players or the younger players that he wants to see in training, see how they react, and that he's not had the chance to spend time with before. Having said that, it could just be that, yeah, he is trying to give people a kick up the arse. Jonathan Joseph hasn't, you know, he knows him very well, but he hasn't been setting the world alight. I find Sinclair maybe the more striking omission, because even though he has been used as a player to bring off the bench by Eddie Jones before, he's one of the players that came back with probably the biggest raised profile out of a lot of the Lions that went away. And I think when you look at some of the performances there, then I would have thought he would have been a shoo-in. So I think it's just really difficult. Is it he's still undecided and he's just saying, actually, you need to work on it? Or is he thinking, well, I've seen enough of Sinclair at the moment with the Lions and I know exactly what Joseph can do, so let me have a look at a few other players. But I'm just not entirely sure. But I do think we need to remember that it's a training squad and there may well be several changes once the November international squad's announced.
Oh, I imagine there'll be plenty of changes. I think also, you have to remember, Harry Williams went to Argentina and was very, very good. He's a solid scrummager. He's a bit more like-for-like with Cole. He doesn't quite do all the flashy stuff Sinclair does, but he's solid in the set piece, lifts in the line out very well, and will hit rocks all day long. I think the other interesting thing from my point of view is what he's done with the backs. If you're not a fly half who can play 12, you're not really going to get in this back line by the looks of it. He's got Farrell, Ford, Francis, Lazowski, Slade, Smith. I mean, they're all, you know, much of a muchness, really. They're all fly halves who can play in the centre. And if you think that Henry Slade's probably the form 13, I know he's played 13 for quite a few seasons, but he was number 10 for the England under 20s when they won the World Cup with the side that had Jack Noel in it. Ford's a 10, Farrell's a 10. If you think that perhaps those three are going to be the back line, 10, 12, 13, it's all very samey to me. And I really hope that they're looking at putting Tio into one of the centre slots, but then that would perhaps mean playing him at 12 with Slade at 13, and then you lose one of Ford or Farrell. Or do you play Ford and Farrell with Tio at 13 and then Slade's wonderful form at the start of the season just doesn't get rewarded? I'm not quite sure where his thinking is at the moment.
It is really tricky to find out, and it is extremely samey with, as you say, with some of those players. There's not enough variety, I think, and it is all going to hinge, I think, on whether he's thinking, yeah, Ford and Farrell, or with Ford's inconsistencies recently and the fact that Farrell is, you know, he just looks equally as comfortable playing at 10 or 12 now, whether he just decides to go with a little bit more control at 10 and then play someone like Slade at 13. And that would probably free up 12 for Ben Teo, I'd say. But it is really tricky. It's just such a guessing game at the moment. But I am surprised with just the numbers that he's got of that same kind of 10-12 player. But then I think one of the other things that struck me is that the back row doesn't look particularly stacked. But then he's got Laws and Itoje amongst, I think, three other locks. And we touched on, I think, last week about this lock turning into a flanker at six. And is he going to use Laws or Itoje there? And that's why he's light on other back rowers. So there's definitely a few interesting things in there, and it probably just won't become clear at all until we get the internationals announced and the squad for that.
Well, the thing with the forwards and then the back row like you say, is if he's playing Itoje or Laws at six, that means Robshaw's going to play at seven. And I love Chris Robshaw, but he's not a seven. He's okay, but for what Jones wants to do, and you've seen what he had with Haskell and he played Tamana Harrison at one point, he wants big, hard-hitting, imposing sevens, which is what Underhill is and what Tom Curry is going to be. So I think if you're looking at Robshaw at six, it was probably going to be Billy at eight, but obviously, unfortunately, he's out for 4 months. So it's probably going to be Hughes at eight now. You're then looking at Underhill or Curry at seven, unless Haskell comes back in. I just don't like the idea of Robshaw at six with Laws or Itoje at... Robshaw at seven, sorry, with Laws or Itoje at six. I just don't think it brings the balance to the back row in terms of the pace that you need to get around the field to really make an impact on the breakdown.
Well, I think it's back to the discussion about what type of number seven you want, and the fact that England just don't really seem to have many options of this fashionable jackal number seven. And that's why Robshaw was given the role for so long. I found it completely bizarre that when there was such a big deal made out of that and then they moved Robshaw to six, that they put Haskell in at seven, because he's not the type of seven they were looking for either. That's when we had the discussions about Matt Kovacic, who's just, you know, he's not really done enough and he's disappeared. I mean, one thing is that obviously Clifford's been called up now into the squad after Billy's injury, which is no doubt for cover at eight. But actually, he played really well at seven. I mean, we'll probably talk about that a little bit more when we cover the games. But there's lots of different options. I'm just not entirely sure where he's going with it.
I don't think Clifford's an international eight. I think he's an international six or seven. With his pace, more likely to be a seven. I would then like to have seen Sam Simmons brought in as a replacement for Billy. I think he's more like for like, but obviously he got a knock on the weekend. I think he's had an excellent start to the season. And then the other thing he's done is he's only got two scrum halves. For some reason, he doesn't like to pick a third scrum half. And I would have not had, I think Lazowski and Francis are both of them lucky to be there, in the sense that I don't think you need both of them in the squad. I think you could have easily put Marchant in, or even Burrell, who's had an excellent start to the season, just for a different type of centre.
Yeah, I completely agree. I almost think that that's one of the reasons you have Ford and Fowler. So you can, if you're going to play Ford at 10 and you want that kind of number 12, then you have Farrell and maybe you get one other option. But otherwise, we start, you know, looking at, it makes more sense to have conventional centres such as, Burrell, who has had a really good start to the season, and Teo, and then and Slade outside. I just think that makes a lot more sense. I just don't really get that number of playmakers in there.
No, and the other thing that I think is quite interesting at the moment is we've got, England have got so many wingers in form. It's ridiculous. I mean, obviously, Yard is in the squad. Daly hasn't really played on the wing so far this season, is in the squad with Watson and Noel and Johnny May. But, I mean, you've got Collins at Northampton's played well. Rocco Degouni's playing well. Lewington at Irish is playing well. There's so many in-form English wingers. It's almost becoming a sort of too much talent that you don't know who they're going to choose.
Yeah, but it's probably not the best time to be an English winger, because competition is an absolute nightmare. And as Jones has proved with his selections already, that you have to be a very specific type of winger, and a winger that's able to defend. And he doesn't care how good your finishing is, because if he doesn't rate your defence, he won't pick you anyway. So that is... It is tough on a lot of players, and for players like Wade and Rocco Degouni, I'm just not sure that unless the management changes, they will ever get a shot, because they just don't seem to be able to get to that level defensively, where in Eddie Jones' eyes, he would feel comfortable picking them in a test side.
I agree. I don't think he's going to pick Rocco or Wade anytime soon.
Right, well, on that sour note for those two, let's move on to another bitter debate point of the week, which has been Sean O'Brien on a radio show voicing his opinion about the Lions coaches, and to summarise, basically saying that he felt that the coaches cost the Lions what otherwise would have been a series win, with the key points being that they were overtrained late in the week before a test, so they went in fatigued, but particular harsh remarks for Rob Howley, which doesn't surprise me, but saying that he couldn't get his points across, and in the end, Farrell and Sexton just took over attack coaching.
Well, I mean, it's not a surprise, because you listen to any Welsh people I know had been telling me for a couple of years that Rob Harley was the luckiest man in Wales to have that job, and their attack had been pretty one-dimensional and not really very exciting for quite a long time. And then you look at, say, the Scarlets in Wales, who play an absolutely fantastic brand of rugby, won the Pro 12 as it was last year, would play an absolutely fantastic wide game using Jonathan Davis, using Liam Williams. And then it comes to them as those same players playing for Wales, and all of a sudden they're not the same guys. They don't appear to be doing what people thought they would. So I'm not surprised that Sean O'Brien felt like that. But I also think they've been taken slightly out of context. He wasn't saying that the tour was... he felt unsuccessful. It's just he's obviously very used to being a very successful sportsman, and he's looking for that extra 1%. And he was saying he felt they could have won the tour and there were things people could have done better. But obviously the media like to, you know, get a headline, and I think they've overplayed it a little bit. But I would be disappointed if some of those Lions players didn't think that they should have won the tour, and they don't look at it and go, we could have done those 1%ers a little bit better. And actually, if we'd done them, we might well have won that series.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I hope you're not accusing the media of sensationalising things, Andy.
Never happens. Never happens.
And yeah, I completely agree. When I saw the headlines and I read the article, I thought it was massively taken out of context. It almost read as if it was this unprovoked, savage attack. And I didn't think, apart from, you know, he's basically said Howley wasn't good enough. But apart from that, I don't really think that there was too much in there that was that harsh. And I think there's been actually a decent amount of support from other players about what he said, even players that weren't on the tour, but just from the viewpoint of, well, look, you know, this is the guy's opinion. Like, we can't be having a go at him. It's not like Matt Dawson and Austin Healey in previous tours where they've put it out in a newspaper column in the middle of the tour. Like, the tour's done and dusted. He's got an opinion. Why shouldn't he? You know, we're constantly having a go at sportsmen for not having any personalities or just trotting out the same boring cliches and stuff. So I think we should just not start criticising people when they actually say what they think. And particularly with Rob Howley, it just seems like an obvious choice. I was really disappointed when he was named as the coach. And as happy as I am, and I'm sure you are as well, you know, as Ireland and England fans, when you play Wales, you look at the talent they've got in the backs, and they're just so blunt a lot of the time. And, you know, when it comes to them playing your side, it can be quite happy, but it's almost criminal to have that much talent and to not be getting anywhere near close enough out of them. So it didn't really surprise me, the comments about Rob Howley.
Well, no, I mean, you look at the Wales backline, and like you say, it's full of talent, but that was the one player who surprised me on the Lions tour was Dan Biggar, because you watch Wales and he kicks a lot of ball away. He's a very sort of functional fly half for Wales, and he gets the moving sort of, but never really that inventive. And actually for the Lions, I thought he was really good. He threw a lot of nice moves. He was running the back line sort of a lot more excited play than he ever does for Wales. And you do wonder if that is just whether it's Gatland's mentality he puts on to Rob Howley, or whether it's how Rob Howley wants the team to play. But like you say, I was sort of disappointed when he got picked, but their main option was Gregor Townsend. And I think when he got asked, from what you gather, Gatlin sort of made it very clear that he would be the big dog and Townsend would be working under him. And I think as a coach who's just about to go and start taking on Gatland as a peer, as an equal, as Scotland, he wasn't going to have it. And so whether you think it's the right thing or not to turn down the Lions, he wasn't having it, and he stayed at home with his feet up in Scotland.
Yeah, we don't know the ins and outs for sure. And initially I was pretty angry with Townsend for turning it down, because when you look at what he had done with Glasgow and the rugby they play, I just thought that would have been brilliant. But then you can completely understand it as someone going into international management. And if Gatland was trying to act the big dog and giving it, you know, the big I am, well, actually, got to be some blame laid at his door for that, because that also shouldn't be how the coaching staff work together. But, you know, I suppose done and dusted now, but I can certainly understand. And I wasn't surprised when I saw the comments about Howley.
No, I agree. But it'll be interesting to see what they do for the makeup of the 2021 tour to South Africa.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe we'll get a bit of a change anyway. Some sick of seeing Gatland's face. Anyway, on that note, move on to part two. We'll get stuck into the Premiership. So I thought it was a really good weekend of rugby in the Premiership this week. And let's start with one of the most thrilling games we've had this season, with Bath against Newcastle at the Rec.
Yeah, I mean, it's a game of two halves, but the halves weren't actually together. So Newcastle's half was the first quarter and the last quarter, and Bath's half were the middle two quarters. 19-0, 32-19, 33-32. I mean, topsy-turvy doesn't quite cover it, but I think, we've been high on Newcastle all year so far, and I think they're starting slowly to sort of show it. It was obviously a tricky game in Philadelphia last week, but they didn't show any signs of jet lag. They were right at Newcastle, at Bath. And they're the two Cicino brothers, I think. I mean, I didn't know that I'd obviously seen Juan Pablo play in the centre, but the hooker, he was everywhere in that sort of first 20 minutes. He made the break for the first try. I think he had a hand in the second try as well. Bath just couldn't seem to cope with them. And Bath's wins at the start of the season, the first two, were built on really aggressive defence, stopping teams going forward. And that seems to have disappeared in the past 2 weeks. Northampton were all over them last week, you know, winning the gain line. And for the first sort of 20 minutes of this game, Newcastle were absolutely winning those collisions all day, getting over the gain line. And it was making it really easy for their backs to play with the ball.
Yeah, well, they got off to an absolute flyer, Newcastle, didn't they? And I'm not sure Bath knew what hit them. It was a surprise still to see them get caught out like that, particularly at home. You would have thought, you know what the Rec's like, it's pretty rowdy there. They love their rugby. It seems like a strange home ground to ever kind of get off to a sluggish start. But Newcastle were just ruthless, and I'm sure you are as well. But I'm feeling really smug about how we spoke about them and how well they're doing now. I feel, you know, I like being smug anyway, but I feel particularly smug about our calls for Newcastle now after we've seen their first few games.
It's one of those things where when you look at a squad and you look at the signings, you can just sort of tell Dean Richards had built it nicely. They were decent last season, and just those little extra players that he's brought in just to bring it up. And it was nice. It's nice to be right.
Yeah, but it is just the progression, and you could see the signs of them there, and the evolution of this team under Dean Richards has just been brilliant. And we talk about teams like Worcester and not having that quality. Newcastle, whether it's through coaching or they have just got better players or a combination of the two, now with the confidence behind them after wins away, they just look like a completely different animal. And they look like they're going to be a challenge for pretty much any side in the Premiership on their day. Nobody can take them lightly now. But I just think it's hugely impressive, because it's not just functional rugby. They were playing some really expansive, attractive stuff as well. I think they need to not get carried away at times. I think for Rocco Degouni's try, it was an instance where they were throwing it around a little bit too much, and maybe they were high on the start they'd made and how well they were doing. And that's something that will probably come with the experience of being in those kind of positions. But I just think that it's going to be about doing it at the right time. They just need to rein it in. But to be able to come back after giving that big lead away from home against what will probably be someone competing in and around that fourth, fifth spot. Just hugely, hugely impressive from Falcons again.
Well, you know, I love my stats. And I think the biggest one for Newcastle is 20 clean breaks they made, and Bath only made 8. And Newcastle had 17 offloads, Bath only had 8. So it's just that obviously getting past the defenders and then being able to get the ball away, like you say, just brings it on. And sometimes it won't work and they will get intercepted and Rocco Degouni will score the interception. But they're trying to at least develop their game into being an attacking side. I think it doesn't help that Bath only made 70% of their tackles. 77%. No. Anything under 85 is not good. And I think they'll be getting ripped in training this week.
Well, it's interesting to know what you were saying about Jonathan Joseph reacting to not being called into the squad. But I didn't really think he had a great game. I thought his try was superb. But for a man whose defence is usually so good and solid, I thought his defence was really poor that game. And there were a couple of tackles where they were just shocking missed tackles from him. And the tackles that you wouldn't normally see him miss. But particularly for Eddie Jones and all of the talk we've had about how much he values it, I don't think anything he's done in that game would be enough to change Eddie Jones' mind if he has just dropped him to give him a kick up the arse.
I mean, we're going to get onto it, especially when you see the performance Slade put in for Exeter. There's no comparison at the moment in their form. So yeah, he's definitely got to step his game up if he wants to win. I mean, it is weird because we're talking Newcastle up and actually they only won by a point and they were very, you know, and it's a sort of last 5 minute conversion that got them it. When Bath played, they played really well. The ball in hand, they can do good things. That Jonathan Joseph try is an example. Matt Banahan's score came from a nice break from the centre, Clark, and they recycled it well. By the way, Banahan has got to be the world's biggest fullback, and he did not disgrace himself at all. That was quite a turn-up for the books. just weird to see him there. So it's not all doom and gloom for Bath, but I just think that they seem to have... The intensity's gone from those first two performances when they had that back row of Garvey, Lowe and Faletau smashing people back over the gain line, not getting any ball. Teams are sort of taking them on now. And it might be with the injuries. Their back row today wasn't... That back row, it's Yules and Lowe and Grant. Now, I don't know who Grant is. He's come from New Zealand and he made a lot of yards. He made 140 metres, which is exceptional carrying. But when I watched Zach Mercer for the under-20s this summer, he's the upcoming, you know, big talk, you know, captain of the under-20s. I'd have expected him to get a bit more game time.
That's it. He does look brilliant, Mercer, but he's just not getting the time at all. And until we start seeing getting some game time in the Premiership, it's going to be hard to say more. But it is a surprise, given what he has done at that age group level for England. And he's just, you know, I think he's highly rated by anybody that's seen him. He's just one of those players that seems to have it and has class. And I'm not sure if it's something they're seeing in training that's just holding him back slightly, but I would certainly like to see him given a few more opportunities.
Oh, yeah. And I just want to, my final bit on this is I really, really like the Newcastle forwards. Wilson, the flanker, again, is one that we didn't talk about, but he's unlucky not to be in Eddie Jones' squad. He's just very, very reliable. I think if Robshaw ever gets injured, he's the best like-for-like replacement we've got. And their second rows of Green and Whitty are the most dependable second rows you're ever likely to see in the Premiership, I think. They turn up week in, week out, and they're absolutely exceptional. And although their pack does not have any star names in it, you rarely are going to see them get bullied up front this year. I mean, even against Saracens last week, they lost, but they weren't taken apart. It wasn't like a hammering. They can stand with their heads held high, and people are going to not want to go up to Newcastle this season. It's going to be tough to get any points up there.
But it is. I know we've spoken about their pack, and it is almost, well, it's the definition of a pack. You know, they are all in there, and as a collective, you know, they function better than the sum of their parts. And that has just seemed that they are so good at doing that. But it is now brilliant, as I was saying, with the evolution that they have that strength in the forwards to now see that actually they are prepared to throw it around a little bit and play attacking rugby even away from home. And I think that has just come with the confidence of some of the results they've got. And I know it was only a narrow win, but how many teams are going to beat Bath at home? You know, Bath are certainly going to win more than they lose at home. And for even one of the top four sides, they would be delighted with a 1 point away win at Bath, let alone the Falcons.
Oh, well, yeah, so they've already turned Sarries over at the Rec this year. So it's, like you say, it's, people aren't going to go there and expect to win. But I mean, it's injuries are mounting up for Bath a bit. You know, Garvey's not there. Faletau's not playing. Burns didn't turn up, did he? There, it's that attritional Premiership rugby, unfortunately, and I think it's not necessarily your best 15. It's going to be sort of your best 40 players this year that are going to end up getting you somewhere because they're dropping like flies.
Yeah, there's injuries all over the place at the moment, isn't there? And that's another thing. One, no one should be too upset about missing out on any squad announcements because I think we've got another couple of rounds of Premiership and some European Cup games in there as well. So no doubt we're going to have more casualties before other squads get announced. But it is just the brutal nature of the game these days, isn't it?
Oh, it's ridiculous. And I mean, we discussed whether we were going to debate the chat of extending the season and the player safety that's been going on, but we want to try and keep the podcast to under 3 hours. So it probably wasn't the best plan. We might well delve into that at a later date, but yeah, it's just getting a bit silly now.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Let's go on to Exeter Wasps. So they started with 31 phases. They finished with 31 points. They were absolutely exceptional, I thought, just dominant. And Wasps just didn't know what to do with themselves, really. They just couldn't cope, could they?
Oh, mate, it wasn't just the fact that they could keep... I mean, they did it for a number of times. I think 31 was the most they got to at the start, and that would have easily been try of the week if they'd gone through 31 phases and scored. It's the fact that they did that on regular occasions, 15, 20 phases, and it's the accuracy to be able to do that over and over again against a good Wasps. I mean, this Wasps side are no mugs. They are a decent side. But to be able to keep going through the phases and know what you're doing, know where your runners are going to be, get the support in, win the rucks, not get turned over that many times in a row, it was ridiculous to watch. And I mean, if you just look at, they had 63% possession, 73% territory. I think at one point in the 70th minute, Wasps only had 8 phases in Exeter's 22.
It's still a complete mystery how they had 10 points at that stage, because it did feel like they hadn't even touched the ball, and they were so lucky to have any points on the board, because it was just relentless accuracy from Exeter and they were just suffocating them. And it is, you know, the number of phases, it is so impressive to be able to go through that without having any kind of handling errors or giving away penalties. I think Worcester actually did quite well having to defend that number of phases without giving away any penalties themselves to the defending side for a long time. But when you've got a team playing like that, it's just such a nightmare to play against.
Well, I mean, you talk about not giving away penalties. Worcester made 240 tackles, which, I mean, I haven't seen anything over 200 all season yet. That's absolutely ridiculous. Launchbury made 27 tackles on his own. No Exeter player was in double figures for tackles made. Wasps had 10 starters and 3 replacements get into double figures for tackles made. If it was just a completely dominant display of rugby from Exeter, not just in the way that they kept the ball, but they played territory well. They didn't let Wasps get out at them. Their defending was up quickly. Wasps couldn't get any ball. Christian Wade, I didn't see him all game. He didn't get any chance to do anything. Elliot Daly didn't really get a chance to do anything. It was just a dominant, absolutely awesome display from Exeter, just to basically bully Wasps for the entire game.
Well, I know that I did call a comfortable Exeter win, but I wasn't expecting it to be such a supreme performance. And I'm starting to think, though, that Wasps aren't quite the side they were last year. And the reason I say that is that I think maybe we've underestimated the loss of someone like Beale to provide a bit of spark in the backs. But we've always known that their backline has been stronger than their forwards. But their forwards, apart from at Worcester, have been getting pushed around a bit. And when you've got, you know, you're going backwards and you're not getting that attacking ball, and then you're just getting suffocated, and you haven't got anybody that can give you a little bit of space like Beale to then start something off. Wasps look like they could struggle against a few sides. And, you know, I don't want to kind of write their obituary yet, but I think there's got to be some serious concern about how they're going to turn this around, particularly when they've lost 2 back rowers to injury already. Again, you know, the injury curse. And when you think that their forwards weren't necessarily the strongest pack in the first place, if they're already losing first team players, that it's going to start becoming a pattern that teams are going to target them at. And as we know, if you don't have any kind of platform in the forwards, it's then going to make it harder for their backs to shine.
I mean, you just have to look at Nathan Hughes, who last season, running over teams, great player, got himself an England call-up, looked absolutely fantastic. He was pretty anonymous all game, really. I didn't see one big carry from him where I went, oh, Nathan Hughes is playing. Nathan Hughes is on it. Nothing from him. Haskell, couple of nice tackles, you know, driving people back in defence occasionally. Nothing really ball in hand. You then shift to the Exeter side of it, and I know he got injured early on, but Simmons made a couple of big breaks. Don Armand is absolutely outrageously good. I mean, And then when Simmons goes off, they bring Julian Salvi on. What a hell of a replacement that is. And their back row didn't lose anything. They kept churning the ball out. They've got, not no names, but they've got some, you know, steady second rows. But again, they do their job. They've got decent props, nice hooker. And it's the collective, again, a bit like we're saying with Newcastle, they all know their job. They all know where they need to be, and they just work together really nicely. And I think Nick White has been an exceptionally nice little pickup at scrum half because he's busy, he shouts at people, he brings everyone into play and just takes a bit of the pressure off Steenson, who actually could have made the score a lot worse. He left about 9 points out on the pitch, to be fair.
It was a bit windy. I'll let him off a little bit.
a little bit windy.
But I have been impressed with White as well. But this is the thing. I know we've spoken a lot about Exeter's forwards and their power. But then their backs completely outshone Wasps as well. I thought that Noel was really good. He was darting around. I love his tenacity when he's going forward. You know, he just seems to kind of get knocked down, and before you know it, he's actually up and out the tackle and off again. Woodburn put in what would have probably been a man of the match performance in most weeks if it wasn't for Slade just being an absolute delight, just pure class to watch. And these are the discussions that you would probably expect to be having about Wasps, but they were just completely shown up and played off the park. And Slade really just kind of put an exclamation point on his inclusion into the England squad, because he may not have express pace that we see with certain people, but he has solid defence. You know, he shoved his shoulder into Nathan Hughes during the game, and he's just got everything. And some of his passing, I just love him going forward. And as we saw, you know, kicking ball out of hand and chips through from last week, he's starting to really look like the finished article.
Oh, and like I say, if England can find a space for him in their starting 15, he's a great player to have. But also, he's a great player to have as your number 23 on your bench. If you ever need recover again, and it comes back to that discussion we had earlier about how England see their midfield, but he's putting his hand up and he is certainly in the question about that. And like I say, Woodburn as well, he never gets mentioned. I mean, England have got such an amazing selection of wingers that he never even gets sort of brought into the conversation. He was, I think, the second top try scorer in the league last year. He started this season on fire. Very good under the high ball. Very good in defence.
Really good under the high ball.
Very good in defence. That sort of winger that Eddie Jones likes. It's nice and solid. Doesn't make mistakes. Will look for work. There's a lot to be said for some of these Chiefs backs, like you say. And I think they are the sum of their parts, as well as having their nice little flashes that they can get. And I think Wasps were just going to... If I was Dai Young, I'd get in. I'd just say, right, we're going to write that one off. Bad day at the office. We'll have a look at some of the things we can do better, but just don't dwell on it, because otherwise they could be sitting there all week just letting it mull over in their heads, and then it could weigh heavy on them when they get on the field on this weekend.
Absolutely. Just before we move on, I do just want to say about Woodburn as well that it is players like him. It's like Exeter are now champions. They are not the promoted side that has surprised everyone and is doing well and is then pushing top four. But we still seem to have players like Woodburn that, because they're almost not as fashionable name as some of the other names knocking around, they don't get mentioned as much. I'm just like, how are Exeter still getting away with this, getting their players not called up for international duty? But Woodburn does look like he's certainly got a real chance of getting called up because of his strengths under the high ball and in defence, as well as being a good finisher. But England just need to decide, I think, what way they're going to play. Are they going to say, this is the way we want to play and we'll pick the players for it? Or are they going to say, these are the form players, so based on that, we'll play in a different style? And I think a lot of that, you know, a lot of how much playing time Slade gets will depend on the decisions they make on that. Right, let's move on. So third feature game of the week, Quinn's Leicester, 28-31. So losing bonus point for Quinn's, but a loss at the Stoop. Not what I was expecting, but it was a much improved Leicester performance. Got to say, it's their best performance of the season so far.
Oh yeah, and I was looking earlier in the Leicester Mercury. You're reading. It's always nice to read the local news. They sort of go to every
game.
Was
it a nice, balanced, unbiased?
Well,
opinion?
It was. No, they were saying just what you said. They've said they flashed against Bath in parts, and they sort of flashed a little bit against. Who did they play last week? Gloucester. But this was the first time that they've sort of put together a more consistent performance all season, where everyone seemed to know what they were doing. The forwards, you know, played with the game plan. The backs was a bit more control, and they were able to just sort of produce the sort of display that they wanted. And then you've got someone like Vianu at the back, who's just able to inject that little bit of magic every now and again. Everyone needs that sort of player. I mean, at one point, I think he beat half the Harlequins team and wanted to come back and do it again.
he was electric, particularly in that first half. And it did seem like a game where it all came together for them, and it probably, you know, stopped a bit of panic amongst some Tigers supporters, because the forwards were where, you know, they're what we've been focusing on, just getting pushed around, and it's being so un-Leicester-like. But they're straight from the off, they were winning scrums, they were going forward, their carriers were making more meters in the tackles. It was everything you were expecting from Leicester forwards from the start of the season. And that, you know, then that allowed other people to shine. But I just think the cohesion they had and the intent that they were playing with was for the full 80 minutes isn't something we've seen yet from them. So there are huge positives to take. I mean, I still think they should have lost the game. They owe the referee about 20 points. But, you know, that's, put it into context, that's still Quins at the Stoop, and they only lost twice their last season. They're an extremely good side at home. So although it can be a cliche about taking it from the performance and not the result, I just think that the performance is almost more promising than the result itself from what we saw.
Yeah, and like you say, they were lucky in some ways. I mean, I won't get you into ranting, though. If you, I had my rant last week about referees, and there definitely were some...
saving it for binge juice. I've got steam coming out my ears trying to hold it in, but I'm going to save it for binge juice.
There are some very interesting calls, but I think the other thing, they just need to look at not switching off. The first two Quins tries, quick tap and go from Danny Kerr. I mean, everyone know. I know Danny Kerr's going to quick tap and go, so surely they discussed it in their team meetings this week. You know, a penalty gets given, you take the ball, you throw the ball away, you roll it away, someone pushes Danny Kerr, they give him a little elbow, make sure he can't take it quickly, and he's straight in. And then the second try was just trying to force it too much. They knocked it on in midfield, and the big number eight was able to get away and then feed it to... Smith was able to get it away to Yard, who broke, to give it to the big number eight, Lamanu, who powerful finish in the corner. If they can tidy up those mistakes, Tigers, and just start to play with a bit more control, which actually I think Tamua bought them this week. He seems to be slowly settling in and getting a grip of the game. And if him and Ford can get a nice understanding, just control the pace a little bit more, stop the silly mistakes, they might have won that game a bit more comfortably.
Yeah, I think Tamua was very good, and I think Ford... Well, I think he was outshone by Marcus Smith, but I still think that he had a solid game. And I think that the Danny Kerr trial let him off, because I think everyone's jaw at the floor at what on earth Genge was playing at. So they probably, it just threw him off a little bit. But it really does seem like it's coming together. But Vianu, Christ, when he got the ball two or three times in that half, he was just slicing through players. And it is that wind that's going to really put some wind in their sails. And when you've got someone that can do that, then you're in with a shout of keeping in touch with a lot of sides. I'm not sure I would agree that they might have won the game more comfortably, because I really do think it was affected a lot by decisions. And I thought Quins actually played quite well. But I think, you know, it was a really close game. It was another back and forth game. It was an absolute thriller to watch. But Quins are going to be smarting after it, I think.
Yeah, only one more thing I want to mention about this game is I hope the Quins players are getting Mike Brown some sort of running lessons, speed lessons. He got rounded by a prop. He got run round by a prop for one of Leicester's tries. And I imagine he's going to be getting some merciful ribbing taken out of him in the changing rooms this week.
Well, it's not like he's a guy that gets angry, so I'm sure he'll be fine.
Nice and calm about it. Deep breaths.
Brilliant, though, wasn't it, when the commentators were saying, you know, people saying that fatherhood might have calmed him down. No, this is Mike Brown. This is Mr. Angry. It's not going to happen. And I think Andy Goode had a bit of a ribbing for him as well about on Twitter about getting rounded by the prop, and he did not like it at all.
Well, to be fair, Andy Goode looks like a prop, so he knows how they run.
Yeah. Well, Goode wouldn't have been getting even a finger on him, to be fair, if it had been going round. Just another thing I do want to say is about the balance of Quinn's back row.
Yeah.
So we were talking that they might be looking a bit thin on the ground, and if everyone was starting, you'd be thinking Clifford at 8, Robshaw at 6, and Wallace at 7. But short of that, they might be struggling. But Luamanu, I thought, was actually really good, and he was a force. And Clifford at 7, I thought, was outstanding. There weren't many times when Quins had the ball in the first half where I didn't see him, and he just popped up everywhere. And I thought is a potentially a real sign that he's starting to get back to fitness now, that he sticks out in a game like that. And I think it's quite promising. We just need to hope that he can keep his fitness and carry on that form.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I don't think he's a number eight. I think especially in the way the game's played now, big number eights like Lemanu that they've got is the way forward. I mean, you look at Billy, Simmons, Hughes, that's what most teams are having. And I think, the balance with him and Robshaw there is very nice for Quinns.
There's a good forwards contest, which isn't something I thought it would be, given Leicester's troubles. But I think the May try really highlighted the improvements in the forwards, because they were so much more committed and able to compete. It just means that Quinns had to commit more players to the breakdown, which wasn't the case in Leicester's previous games. And when you've got those players being forced to commit, there was so much space then out wide when they were able to get the ball there for May. And it seems so simple, but it was just, once they had that, competition and the forwards seemed to have got their arses in gear, certainly looks a lot more bright now for Leicester than it was looking a week or two ago.
And it does also help when Tamua can throw that beautiful flat pass just straight into May's running stride. And it's easy finish for May then.
Yeah, well, that's another one, wasn't it? As soon as he scored, Brown was at him, pushing him all over it. Really, really is an angry man, but I do like him. Right, so that's all our feature games done, isn't it? So let's have a quick recap of the other three games in the Premiership. Let's start with Friday night. We'll go with Gloucester's win against Worcester. So 24-19, handy losing bonus point for Worcester. And a game that probably started out in a way that everyone expected to and was looking like it might be quite straightforward. But credit to Worcester, they really dug in. They seem to have a bit of dog in them, and they did okay.
I think Gloucester stepped off a little bit. Gloucester were excellent, scored some wonderful tries in the first half and actually started the second half. Jason Wood looking absolutely fantastic. But Worcester can't get out their own way. The amount of times Worcester got into positions where they could do well, they were 5 metres out and the ball was so slow. I mean, I could have made a cup of tea and come back in and Peter Stringer was still assessing what to do. And then they'd knock it on. And it just summed up the game where they came back into it. They managed to get themselves back into a position where they could win the game, kicked to the corner, 5 metre line out, drove it a little bit. Ball comes out into midfield and Dave Denton knocks it on. I mean, I don't know how he still got a job because he was poor at Bath last year.
Yeah,
and
he was.
And he carried, I think he had something like 20 carries and made 17 metres. It's like negative yardage. I don't understand how he's done that.
but it's not great. It's not a good look, is it?
But yeah, he was just... I felt for some of the Worcester players because they really are trying hard. And I think for them, they need to get a settled 9 and 10 who are going to run the game. I think they've had a different 10 start every week. They've had different 9 start every week. We talked Johnny R up after the game against Wasps. He's obviously injured. He's not playing. And they just need a settled halfback pairing to run the game for them because they were just stodgy at times. And it just showed, because when Gloucester went and went well, it was just such a... It was almost like they were playing a different sport.
Yeah, so I don't want to be patronising to Worcester by saying each week that I think they put in a lot of effort and, the players seem to be trying, but they just, they are lacking that bit of quality. But it is quality. It's consistency in key positions. They are really missing it. Obviously, they did end up with a shout of actually winning the game towards the end. But I've seen too many games of Worcester this season where you're watching the game and you see it pop up that they're in their 19th phase. And again, impressive to put that many phases together. But then almost what's the point if you've had 19 phases and you've made 10 metres? You need to have players that are going to be able to break the game line and actually do more with the ball to get forward. And even the players and the coaches, they don't want pats on the head saying, we're really impressed with how they got guts and they stuck it out. If they're not getting anything, because it is the Premiership, someone's going to get relegated and they need points. But even given all of that, a losing bonus point away at Gloucester isn't really the worst result for them. If they can pick up a few more losing bonus points away from home and start trying to turn a couple of close defeats into wins at six ways, then they'll do well. And I think, compared to how Irish have done after their start against Quinns, they might be feeling a little bit more optimistic.
Well, yeah, I mean, you were brave in your call last week when you said you thought...
Stupid? Is that what you said?
I didn't say stupid. I said brave. I thought stupid and I said brave. And it just goes to show, because Nick Kennedy came out last week and he said, we can't start games like we did against Exeter. We can't let teams get ahead of us. We've got to come out, blah, blah, blah. first 60 seconds, Saints get the ball, keep the ball, score. And then, you know, four or five minutes later, they've scored again. By the 32nd minute, they've already got the bonus point. And that's it then. I mean, no matter what Irish want to do, and the second half was better, and Lewington looks very, very good. I mean, that try score was fantastic, and he might well end up with a move somewhere else. But you just can't give teams, you know, a 14-point head start in the first 6 minutes.
Yeah, can I just say, I think Nick Kennedy, what a lovely man. Every time I see him, I just think, you look like a really nice man. You're not, maybe not someone that I'd go think, oh, I fancy a night out and a few beers with. But if I wanted to meet up with someone for coffee and lunch, I might say, do you know what, Nick, are you about? Anyway, slightly digress. Just thought I'd let you know.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah. Lovely. Seems like a lovely fella. But yeah, Irish, God, it's so frustrating. And when we talk about it, it's their first proper home game of the season. The crowd, you know, everyone, even just on social media, everyone's up for it. They're like, yeah, everyone's at the mad stad. And it was just ruined in 5-10 minutes. It's just completely gone to pot. You know, Northampton have been, you know, much improved. But after complimenting Irish in the first week, I do not know what has happened to them defensively. But they're at complete sixes and sevens. And in the last three games, I think it's 100, you'll probably tell me because you love a stat, but I think it's 113 points they've conceded in their last three games.
Sounds about right.
I mean, that is complete relegation form. And I don't care if you scored 25 points against Northampton in the end, because it was a complete moot point. They didn't get a bonus. They didn't get a fourth try, so there's no bonus point from that. It maybe makes the scoreline look a little less embarrassing, but the gulf in class and the difference between the two sides was huge. And I just don't know what happened, because it's not like we've seen this from game one. The defence was good, and it was one of the things that I was praising them for after the first week. If they don't get this sorted sharpish, then they are bang in trouble.
I think that, yeah, they are bang in trouble, and I think they're just lucky at the moment that Worcester have started the season worse than them.
Yeah, absolutely. And they need to start turning it around. Right, we'll leave that there then, and we'll gloss over the last game, which is Surrey's Sale. And I say gloss over because it was as predictable as it was routine. And the biggest news out of any of it really was Billy's injury.
Yeah, Billy getting injured. I think it was nice to see Spencer get a game at 9 for Surrey's, and he looked good. It's weird to see De Klerk playing at 10, having played so well at 9. Sale's depth at 10 must be shocking that they can't find someone to come and step in. And Sale seems to have found another young winger in McGuigan, who scored a couple of nice finishes, actually. Really good finishing. But yeah, routine and effective and efficient from Sarries, but we wouldn't have expected anything less.
Yeah, Sale don't travel well. Sarries are ruthless. Itoje was on the rampage again, stealing lineouts, just running into people, going past them. And yeah, I think Sale will be quite happy just to go home.
Agreed.
Right, end of part two. Let's move on. And part three, we're going to have a quick chat about Pro 14.
We are indeed. And so I managed to catch some of the highlights of the Pro 14 because I didn't get to watch any of the games live. But I was very, very impressed with Glasgow. Munster were undefeated, I think, going into... No, Munster lost before, but... Munster, Glasgow, they played twice in the Champions Cup last year. Munster won both games. And I think sort of Glasgow got a bit of a schooling almost. And despite the fact that Glasgow did very well in the Pro 14, they absolutely hammered Munster, to be fair. But my favourite part of the entire game, we'll get on some of the tries, and there were some great tries, but Nigel Owen's calling all 30 players over to give them a telling off.
I only see Nigel Owen getting away with that, but he does love it, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, and to be fair, he always has a good game. Now Sato, this Glasgow winger, he made some absolutely fantastic breaks. Scored the first try, and he had another absolutely brilliant break for Glasgow's final try. It was like a pinball. He was bouncing off tackles, went through about three or four, and then the ball was recycled, and Cummings went over. They just seemed to just control the game, I think, from what I've read. They didn't let Munster into it. They didn't let Munster do what Munster liked to do, gain the territory, drive the mauls, get going. They just kept the pace high, you know, like Glasgow liked to do with Finn Russell pulling the strings. And they just ran all over them. And it was a bit of a shock, really, seeing that score when I had a look.
It was a shock. It was an upsetting shock. The thing is that, look, Glasgow are a really good side, particularly at home. And I know Munster have had the better of them over the last year or so. But the result wasn't necessarily a surprise, but it was the score and the manner of it. I've caught up a little bit on the game, and it just seemed like a very un-Munster-like performance. And some of that will be down to Glasgow and the way they played. But what can't be accounted for is just it seems so lackluster. And Blaendahl didn't have a very good game at 10. His kicking from the tee was very poor. The scrum half, Duncan Williams, his passing wasn't great, but then Munster's work at the breakdown was really sloppy, and that meant that he virtually never had clean ball to get out. And when you've got that happening, it then makes it hard to have good ball to then put to the backs and to start going forward. There were, I think Munster won a scrum penalty earlier on in the game, and it was a real chance for them to try and shift a bit of momentum and get back into it. And Blaendahl missed a really kickable penalty, and that seemed to knock him a bit. So I think, you know, when you've got such poor games from your 9 and 10, you're facing an uphill battle straight away, because they're the players you rely on to control things and make the team tick. So Glasgow were very impressive, but I think really, really disappointing from Munster. And they're going to have to start working out how to play better against these sides, because they got really turned over by Scarlets in the final of the Pro 14 or the Pro 12 last year. And Glasgow and Scarlets are quite similar sides. And if they don't figure out how they're going to slow the ball down or how they're going to operate more efficiently themselves, they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I think it's the way I think some of those teams in the Pro 14 are trying to play that very wider game, not try and go short all the time, get the ball wide and try and move around these teams, mainly in that division, sort of your Munsters and your Leinsters, who are very good at the breakdown. It's always been the tradition of those Irish sides to be very big at the breakdown, you know, win that battle and then stop teams. But actually, if your breakdowns are so far apart and your forwards are all over the field, it makes it a lot more difficult for you to be able to slow the ball down. And when you've got, like, say, someone like Finn Russell and Ali Price at 9 for Glasgow running the show, and they're pulling you left, right and centre, actually it's going to be very difficult, and they do need to come up with some sort of strategy. Because I think, like you say, having seen the Scarlets this week beat Edinburgh very nicely, and actually another team I've been impressed with is Ulster, playing sort of slightly similar, it's something that I think teams are going to try and pick on Munster with.
Yeah, just quickly, Andy, one Munster, one Leicester. If you pluralise them again, I'm going to put you in bin juice.
Harsh, but fair.
You will be my bin juice, Brad. So Leinster, they didn't fare much better either. They lost pretty handily to Cheetahs in South Africa. Cheetahs getting a 38-19 win with the try bonus point as well. I think there was a slightly more impressive crowd this week, but not the result Leinster wanted at all. So not a great weekend for Munster and Leinster.
Well, I haven't seen this game because I haven't had a chance to see the highlights, but from what I've read, they just didn't really turn up. The Cheetahs were very, very good. And that's two wins in a row now for the Cheetahs. And they're obviously clearly by a distance the better of the South African sides. My knowledge isn't the best on this, whether they kept more of their players. They managed to keep hold of some of the players after the Super 14 or Super 18 or however many there are in that season this year. And that's why they've got a bit more sort of consistency. And especially playing at home, they're obviously going to be a little bit better. Again, I don't know if they're at altitude compared to the Southern Kings. And again, that might have an effect. But I think, same as we've said, some of the teams, perhaps Leinster, just write it off and just wait for them to turn up in Dublin and get their revenge.
Yeah, I'm sure Leinster will be pretty happy to go back. You know, they've not had the smoothest time out there with a couple of the Kiwis being sent away for not having the appropriate visa. Kean Healy got chucked off the flight for having his laptop on. And then they get spanked with a bonus point. So I definitely think it's a cut your losses and leave. But, you know, I think the nature of the two conferences in the Pro 14 now, Leinster are going to be there and thereabouts at the top. They're not going to be concerned about that, but they will go back. And I'm sure their next game, they'll be thrashing somebody at home. Cheetahs do. Is that the margin, isn't it, between the Cheetahs and the Southern Kings looks pretty enormous, because the Kings have been absolutely diabolical and their results have been a complete shambles. I mean, their defence is worse than Irish.
Well, they've conceded 163 points in four games. And my very, very simple math tells me that's 40 points a game. That's ridiculous. I mean, that's really, really bad. I mean, you've got two undefeated teams now in there, Glasgow in one division and Ulster in the other division. Ulster put an absolute spanking on the Dragons. I did see those tries, and they looked very, very good. They scored some very, very nice tries, wide play, nice getting their backs into the game. Don't know what you can really put into it because they're playing the Dragons, who aren't necessarily the best, but I really think Ulster and Scarlets and Glasgow are possibly, you know, looking at taking over perhaps from the Munster and Leinster as being the teams to go after in that one. And just a quick word on Treviso, who in what looked like an absolutely filthy, filthy weather, scored in the first 60 seconds and then held out the Ospreys for the other 79, which is an indictment of how bad the Ospreys are this year.
Yeah, we know that Ospreys can be good, bad and indifferent, but I think they've just forgotten about the being good part so far this season, and maybe the indifferent as well. They've just been bad. Treviso, though, I mean, that's two wins for them now. And Italy must be going wild, any rugby fans they've got trying to pay attention to it, because, you know, with Zebre winning, Treviso winning twice, it is great, but the Ospreys players must be feeling a bit ashamed of themselves, I think, after that performance.
But Bigger went off injured, which, you know, but you bring on Sam Davies, who they were wanting to start for Wales last autumn, some of the Welsh fans. Alwyn Jones was playing, Justin Tipperick was playing. This isn't a bad side. Reece Webb plays. They're a very, very good side, or good players, yeah, who are perhaps coached badly. And I think there's going to be a lot of calls. I think it's Steve Tandy, the coach down there. A lot of calls for his head soon if they don't pick up one win out of four. And I think they've only won two of their last 10 games, if you take it back to last season. There's something wrong at the Ospreys.
Absolutely. And so just even those players you've mentioned, they are not just decent players. They are very, very good players. And any team with those players in should not be losing to Treviso. It does sound like there's something going on a bit with the coaching, and they will not be liking that at all. So, you know, another result like that, he's going to be under huge, huge pressure, isn't he?
Well, yeah, there's nothing more you can say. Yeah, I know the Welsh media are nice and gentle on their coaches. so I mean, we're not in Wales to get the press, but I imagine, you know, the Wales Online and all of their local newspapers down in Swansea and down there will be absolutely giving it to him, all guns blazing, both barrels.
Right, okay, let's move on. We'll get to part four. So before we run through the predictions, because it's Monday, I forgot to do our try of the week, hit of the week and binge juice. So let's quickly do that, and then we'll go for predictions next week in the Premiership and the Pro 14. So first up, we'll go for try of the week. What are you thinking, Andy?
Well, as with last week, I've got a few contenders. There's a definite winner. I want to give a special mention to Bateman again for a prop rounding a fullback to go in under the post. He looks so happy. Props on the charge, one of my favourite things in rugby. Just the look of amazement on their face when they break the line and having no idea what to do when they get into open space. Lewington's try was good. Jonathan Joseph's try was good. But I'm giving it to Billy Twelvetree's try for Gloucester. Just after half time, Trinder came on, throws a lovely dummy, goes through the line, then he does that nice thing where he sort of slows down a little bit, swivels his hips, turns a defender, makes another break, gives it to Hines back to Trinder, and then a filthy offload over his shoulder to 12 trees to dive under the posts. Absolutely wonderful try.
Well, that's yeah, I don't really have anything to add, because I had notable mentions for Joseph, Bateman and Lewington, but clear winner of the 12 trees try. But really, it's the Trinder try. Even if 12 trees touchdown, that's Trinder's try all day long. And another player, if he can stay fit, will be very interesting to see how he gets on, because he's got exceptional talent. Oh, right, yes. Hit of the week. What you got for hit of the week?
Again, it's from on my friend Dave Denton, who I've savaged already. But he picked up the ball, and it was just an indictment of his performance. He picked up the ball, and Ruskin, the Gloucester number one, absolutely ended him. Just smashed him back about 2 or 3 yards, and it was just lovely to see a prop again, just having a real impact on the game. And he absolutely smashed him quite hard. There were two other good hits in that game. One of them was by our friend Scotland Williamson. You know, name like a posh boy, hits like a train. But it was he ended up knocking Tom Savage out, so it was probably not the best one to pick. And then the only other thing I got to mention in that game, it wasn't really hit of the week, but it looked like he'd been hit by a sniper. Poor Worcester second row Phillips was running and he'd got through, and then all of a sudden he was not running, and I think his hamstring or something in his hip went and he just stopped. And he'd been hit by a sniper. That's my extra little hit of the week.
Okay, my hit of the week, slightly different. It's the slap in the face to Mike Brown of being skinned by a prop. Sorry, Mike, I do love you, but dearie me, that is not looking good. And he will not be allowed to forget that one for a long, long time. Right, bin juice. Have you got any particular juicy binness, Andy, that you want to rant about today sure you leave me enough time?
I've got a little rant, and my little rant is about idiotic people going into rucks with their elbows. I don't get it. We had Blair Cowan last week, red card. Someone's over the ruck. The ball looked like it was available, and you just go in with your elbow, short arm them into the head. You'd think, oh, hang on, he's done that last week, and the ref's red carded him. Let's not do that again. No. Two people obviously didn't see that. Fionn Wachelli, I can't say his name properly, from Munster.
Effort. I liked it.
Do you know how to pronounce it?
No, I just like your effort.
I think it's Witcher. It could be Witcherly. Anyway, and then Michael Rizzo from Edinburgh, both sent off for exactly the same thing as Blair Cowan was last week. Someone's in the ruck, clear them out properly. Don't just elbow them in the face. It's a cheap shot. It's not necessary. You'll get put in bin juice.
All right. Nice. Thanks. My bin juice, different. Yellow card decisions, specifically the ref at the stoop, the one that Tigers owe 40 pints to. It's gone up 20 points since the start of the show because I'm already more annoyed about it now than I was at the start. It's just an embarrassment. And I was so angry after that game. I don't want refs deciding games or having such a big hand. And there are some calls which are difficult. Two of these definitely weren't. Dan Cole, pass coming across, no effort to catch it, shoved his meaty hand out, hands like dustbin lids, just shoved it out, knocked it down. Absolute guaranteed yellow card. He just trotted off back. Ref didn't do anything. Wasn't sure it could get much worse. Then Genge runs back from an offside position, takes a beautiful interception. But that is one of the most blatant yellow card offences you will see all season. And the ref did nothing. Absolutely nothing, and it's just disgraceful. And if you can't actually see that and call it as a yellow card, don't ref. They should be having some kind of suspension, because these are key players in a key game that's really tight, and you need to referee the game correctly. And as I said, it is a tough gig, but they aren't tough decisions, and that is what I was just so angry about. And even with the Marlon Yard one, which resulted in Malouf going up the other end and Leicester got the penalty to win the game. I don't think it was foul play on tackling Marlon Yard, because Genge actually did incredibly well to motor up and get next to him. But he had his hand on him already. But it was Vianu coming in the other end. Now, he went in with his elbow, which caught Yard in the face. Now, it was a slightly less severe collision, but that is exactly what Stander got sent off for against South Africa when he took out Lambie. And he got sent off for that. Now, it's a yellow card all day long. He's gone in with his elbow, it's hit him in the face. And I just thought the ref was completely useless when it came to spotting that foul play and giving yellow cards. And that's why he's my bin juice.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand. Did you think the referee had a good game?
Oh, I'd be sleeping with the fishes if I had my way after that. Right, prediction time, Andy.
Right, where are we starting? Talk to me.
No sitting on the fence. We are starting with Newcastle at home to Irish.
Newcastle, bonus point win.
Okay, I'm going to go Newcastle, but without a bonus point. Then we've got Worcester against Saris. Ouch.
Saris with a bonus point.
Saris with a bonus point for me as well. Sale back at home comforts against the exceptional Travellers, Gloucester.
This is the most difficult one for me to call at the moment. I'm going to go Sale, no bonus point.
I'm going to go Sale, bonus point. And Leicester at home to Exeter.
Exeter, bonus point.
Yeah, I agree. Not very often you probably say that about games at Welford Road for the away side, but I completely agree. And then Northampton at home to Quins. Interesting.
I it would be if it had been the game after the first game of the season, because I'd have said Quins to win. But Northampton look like they're on a roll, and they've put away some decent sides in Tigers and Bath, and Quins are coming off a difficult defeat. I'm going to go Saints, no bonus point.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest nightmare game to call, because last away game, Quins have beaten Wasps, but then, you know, they struggled to put Leicester away, and Saints have turned it around. I am going to go Quins win, Northampton losing bonus point.
Ooh.
And then Wasps, Bath. Another one that's actually quite tricky.
It is quite tricky. It depends how Wasps can handle their injuries, but I mean, Bath are Jekyll and Hyde at the moment. It's very, very tricky. Although I'm going to say I don't think Wasps will lose two games on the trot at the Rico, having won 20 on a bounce. But I think actually this could be a very scrappy, probably a tough game to watch, really. I'm not exactly sure it's going to be a thing of beauty. Wasps, Bath get a losing bonus point.
I think they will lose two games in a row at home, and I'm going to go for Bath, Wasps losing bonus point.
Right, just so I've got this, we both picked Sale to beat Gloucester. Do you think Gloucester will get a losing bonus point?
No.
Oh, I do. I'm going to add that into my little prediction here. I think Gloucester will get a losing bonus point. Do you think Leicester will get a losing bonus point against Exeter?
No.
Okay, there we go. Easy peasy. Right.
Pro 14, Cheetahs at home to Ospreys.
Cheetahs.
Yeah, I agree. Glasgow at home to Treviso. Glasgow. Probably don't need to actually say anything about that, do we?
Glasgow with a bonus point, no messing.
Bonus point. Leinster at home to Edinburgh.
Leinster, bonus point.
Yeah, same for me. And then Scarlets at home to Connacht.
Scarlets, bonus point.
Yeah, completely agree as well. Munster at home to Blues.
Munster with a bonus point.
I'm going to go Munster, no bonus point.
Ooh.
And then Zebra at home to Ulster.
Ulster with a bonus point.
Yeah, when I was looking at these games, I was thinking, I'm going to call a lot of bonus points. I see bonus points all over the shop in the Pro 14 next weekend. And then Dragons at home to the Southern Kings.
Oh, Dragons by, like, the world.
But Dragons are so rubbish at the moment as well. But Southern Kings, I suppose, are even worse. I don't know whether, because they're both so bad, this is either going to be awful or it'll end up being really entertaining.
So,
but I'm going to go Dragons win, but no bonus point.
You're not giving them four tries against that Southern Kings defence, are you sure? I'd already written down bonus point for you, by the way. I'm going to have to scribble that out.
Scribble it out. I'm going Dragons win, no bonus point.
And are you giving the Cheetahs a bonus point at home to the Ospreys?
No.
I am.
Right, is that all the predictions wrapped up, isn't it?
Yeah, I've given every team winning in the Pro 12 a bonus point. It's going to be tries for everybody.
Hopefully. It's going to be like the most dull, stodgy weekend we've ever known. Hopefully not. Right, that wraps up episode 5 of In The Bin. Thank you, everyone, and make sure that you follow us on Twitter at In The Bin Rugby, and also you check out lastwordonrugby.com for lots of other excellent articles about the Premiership and the Pro 14 and pretty much every other league you can think of. And we will see you next week. Say goodbye, Andy.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.